Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Commercial Real Estate 101 Meetup Group. In today's episode, what I want to do is something a little bit different. I actually had the honor and privilege of being interviewed on Whitney Sewell's The Real Estate Syndication Show podcast early last year. And in the podcast, we actually discussed commercial real estate personal branding. So in the episode, we talk a lot about me getting started in the brokerage business back in mid-2019, and then some of the things that I did early on in my career to help build a brand for myself. So we talk and get into how to start a meetup, how to write books, other digital platform things that I've done, including videos and, you know, even this podcast and meetup, virtual meetup. So you'll gain some hopefully strategies that you can take and employ in your business, whether you're a commercial real estate broker yourself, or even if you're an investor and you're looking to raise capital, or even if you're in a professional in another vertical within the commercial real estate industry. All this information hopefully will apply to you and help you build a commercial real estate personal brand. So without further ado, let's go ahead and dive right in.
Welcome to the Real Estate Syndication Show. Whether you are a seasoned investor or building a new real estate business, this is the show for you. Whitney Sewell talks to top experts in the business. Our goal is to help you master real estate syndication. And now your host, Whitney Sewell.
This is your daily real estate syndication show. I'm your host, Whitney Sewell. Today, our guest is Rafael Golazo. Rafael is a licensed commercial real estate agent, author, and co-host of the Commercial Real Estate Academy podcast. His book, Before You Sign That Lease, is a comprehensive guide that helps business owners identify, negotiate, and ultimately lease commercial property as quickly and seamlessly as possible. He resides in Louisville, Kentucky with his fiance, Melanie, and dog, Sophie. But Rafael and I talk extensively today about how he's grown his brand very quickly. He has a background in software, but he has a brokerage business now. And we go into a couple of different things. I mean, even from publishing many books and how that has helped him, but some key things around even publishing a book that makes that process not seem as daunting in case you are also looking to publish a book, but also ways that he creates content, what he uses it for, and also the platform that he considers to be the most valuable and where you should be focusing. So in ways that he's grown his thought leadership platform in a big way. So I hope you enjoy the show and learn a lot. Rafael, welcome to the show. You have many skill sets that anybody in the commercial real estate business needs to have. We're going to talk about a few of those today. I think that's going to help the listener. Also you are, your business is commercial real estate, right? But part of that that's helped you to grow, helped you to scale, man, everybody in this business needs to know these things, needs to be thinking about these things. And many of that's how you've built your brand and how you've just effectively created content, right? And met people and built that to scale to help you to grow fast. I'm looking forward to that discussion because I personally know how much work that is, but how important it is as well. Tell us a little bit about your focus in commercial real estate right now, what you're doing, and let's jump in.
Sure. So I'm actually located here in Louisville, Kentucky. I'm a commercial real estate broker focusing on retail and multifamily properties is really what I'm doing on the brokerage side. And then a good friend of mine who's in a commercial construction company, we're looking to start a development company. So really targeting vacant and or underperforming retail and industrial properties and redeveloping them into a new use or, you know, redeveloping them and then filling them with tenants in order to, you know, improve the income of the property. So that's kind of what I'm focused on right now. I'm actually an engineer by trade. You know, I did software development and consulting for about 5 years before jumping into commercial real estate in 2019. So it's been a great ride so far.
Nice. Nice. Well, pleasure to, again, to have you on the show. And, you know, let's just jump right in. Like, you have learned a lot about building a personal brand, you know, for those in the commercial real estate space. And so I want to just help the listener to do the same, right? It's so important. You know, people talk about, you know, well, I don't really want to be on social media or on the internet. I'm like, well, you almost will not have a business now, right? You know, in this day and time, there's very few that can survive without having an online presence and just a brand, right? That people are seeing and getting in touch with almost on a daily basis, if not at least weekly. But let's jump in. Help us to build that personal brand or that listener who, and even myself, that's, you know, trying to build that brand in commercial real estate.
Sure. So I guess my first foyer into building a personal brand started back in 2016. I was working as a software consultant for a company. I was located in Puerto Rico at the time, working on a big software project. And, you know, I started doing a lot of personal development, you know, researching a lot and realized that a lot of the information that I was researching was fragmented across the internet. And so I started writing a blog. You know, that was my first foyer into personal brand building. At that point, once I had written about 20 articles, I realized that I had about 30,000 words. And after reading an article that said that, you know, 50,000 words is a book, I actually wrote 20,000 words, rounded it out, and then I wrote my first book. And I've written 6 books at this point, 5 on personal development or 4 on personal development topics. And then the 5th one is before you sign that lease, which is on commercial real estate. So from the book side of things, it's really just consistency, 250 to 500 words a day. If you think about it, let's say you write 500 words a day, that's 100 days to write a book, a 200-page book. So that's a starting point. And then, you know, you got YouTube, again, frequently asked questions are great videos, usually between 3 to 10 minutes, being answering questions for people that you normally get on a regular basis anyways, you know, so why not create a video content for that? And then on the transcription piece, you know, you do a video for 3 to 5 minutes, and then you go to like somewhere like rev.com and have it transcribed. And then you can create a blog post, utilizing that. And then I'm sure it's at a certain point in the interview, we'll talk about meetups and the value of running meetups and for both virtual and in person, which is something that I do on a regular basis.
Nice. Well, you just said a lot right there that I feel like there's probably a lot of listeners that are like, wait, you know, like, wait a minute, right? You know, how do I do those things he just mentioned, right? So I want to back up a little bit, and, you know, the book writing piece of our branding, you know, I feel like is a like the next wave of podcasting almost, right? And many people are trying to write a book, and I love how you broke that down. Like, I mean, you broke it down even on a daily basis. So this is what you have to do, and all of a sudden, you know, you have a book that you could hand out. And you know, I've heard people say like that's the new business card. Even, you know, is having that book. It definitely is another way. Even like podcasting, right? It gets you in the front of the room. All right. Often I know it has helped me to speak in front of audiences, you know, larger than I ever imagined. But that book is another way to just express you being that thought leader, right? That expert. Tell me a little, the listener and I, a little bit about that process of writing a book, because that seems daunting to most, I think, even myself, like, wait a minute, you know, like, I don't even know where to start.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I felt the exact same way when I first undertook the ordeal. Really what it comes down to is just consistently writing and creating some sort of outline. So if you have a topic that you're very passionate about and you're very interested in writing about, creating like a book outline where, you know, you talk about, you have 20 to 25 topics within the book, and then you have subtopics within those major topics, you end up being able to structure a book format. And then from there, it's consistently writing. And at first it's difficult. You know, in particular, I come from an engineering background. I was never the best writer, nor the best communicator. But through the process of writing on a regular basis and trying to hit a word count each day, it slowly becomes more natural to you. And at this point, I view myself as an extremely effective writer, just because I've written almost 1 million words of original content. But that took 5 years, you know, 5 years of consistent writing on a regular basis. And then, you know, it adds up quickly. And you'd be surprised. I mean, there's a book called The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy that kind of changed my perspective on life, where it's small, consistent actions, positive actions on a daily basis add up to massive results in a relatively short period of time. So that same approach can be applied to writing a book, to starting a meetup, to doing a podcast, which is amazing what you've been able to do over the last several years. I mean, just with the things you've been doing. So.
Awesome. You know, and even, you know, writing a book and I was going to say actually that book by Darren Hardy, I've heard so many great things about. I'll admit I've not read that yet. It's in my wish list, but I have not got that book yet. However, I personally experienced that. You know, it's like when I decided to take control of almost every minute of my day, the best that I could, man, things started changing. And that just that consistency education. For me, it was morning, right? Changing my morning routine and being very purposeful with every minute and educating, you know, after 6 months, you're like, whoa, you know, what's just happened, you know, and it, you know, that consistency every day. But I wanted to jump to, what about like publishing something like that? Okay. So we start writing, we start, you know, trying to gather our thoughts together. Well, who do we need to help us to publish something like that? And so it's, I guess, produced the best way possible.
Sure. So luckily nowadays, it's very, very easy to publish. There's something known as self-publishing that you can utilize, you know, services like Amazon KDP, which is what I use. So what I would do is once I finished my book, I would edit it myself a few times and then hire an editor via Fiverr or Upwork. You know, you kind of, you solicit the services of an editor. And you can usually do that for not very much, you know, $200-$300 max to be able to have someone edit your book from top to bottom. And then from there, you solicit the services of a designer. I use 99 Designs, but you can use, you know, services like Fiverr, Upwork, whatever. And, you know, you design the cover and make sure it's attractive in some capacity. And once it's done, then you go through the process of uploading it to Amazon KDP. And the great thing about something like Amazon is that it's print on demand. So if someone actually wants the book, they buy it on Amazon and it'll be printed on site at a particular facility and then be mailed to them instead of you having to, you know, solicit the order and then having to go to the post office, drop off the book and whatever else, you know, you're able to just have it pretty much on autopilot. And so it's been kind of cool to see, you know, people buying my books every month. I have a report that's sent out from Amazon KDP and I just review it and I'm like, wow, okay, cool. You know, they bought XYZ amount of books and that's all passive income.
I did not know that they were printed on demand. That's impressive right there. Mm-hmm. That happens. And can they still get it in 2 days or something? You know?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Wow. 100%. Mm-hmm. Wow. So you mentioned, I think you said you've written 5 books on self-improvement, or is that right?
Four on self-improvement. It was called the Millennial Playbook Series and they focused on 5 key topics, which is personal development, professional development, exercise, healthy eating habits, and finances.
So yeah. I'm sure many listeners, you know, you're thinking about that and it's kind of like starting a podcast, right? What do I name it? What's my focus? Well, same thing here in this. It's like, well, you know, Raphael, well, there's so many self-improvement books, right? How's my book going to stand out? Why would somebody buy mine over someone else's? It's a common question I get with podcasting. And I know what I say to them, but I just wonder, like, how do you answer that? How did you move forward with 4 books on self-improvement? I'm sure you thought about probably in the beginning, well, there's so many on that topic, right?
Yeah, of course. And again, I'm not going to be the next J.K. Rowling. So if you're going into with the mindset of being like, you know, the next best-selling author in the world, then you may be slightly disappointed. But there's so much utility in being able to be an author of that many books. You know, you become a much more effective communicator. Your writing skills, which in my opinion are supremely underrated in a business setting, improved substantially. Your public speaking ability, in particular, if you're one to be able to get on stage and talk about the books, become, you know, immensely better. So there's a lot of outside or ancillary benefits of writing a book that you may not receive from the actual, you know, sales of the book. As far as marketing the book, a lot of it is just getting out there and marketing, you know, doing events, doing giveaways, you know, telling people to review your book, sending copies to people that strategically that you think would be a good fit as far as, you know, advocating for your book. So it's generic or general marketing techniques. And it's not something that happens overnight, you know, especially in a crowded market like the personal development space. It's one of those things where you just have to be consistent about it on a day-to-day basis. And then over time, you start building a brand and, you know, and that's it.
Were those topics like self-improvement or anything else you've written on, did you come up with that based on who you were writing to or who your niche was, your focused audience, or was this just something you were passionate about? How did you think through that?
Yeah. So it started off as more of a, you know, filling a need for myself. And I feel like that's what a lot of, you know, writing is that, you know, you wish something like this was around when you were going through the process of trying to explore who you were. And I, at that time when I started writing, I was very lost in my, you know, journey. You know, I was in a lucrative job, but, you know, I was in a very high exposure project, but inside I felt, you know, lost and confused and, you know, like many 23, 24, 25 year olds. And so that's what spurred me to go through the process of trying to write content that I believe to be valuable to me. And luckily it was also valuable to other people. So if you kind of can scratch your own itch, a lot of times there's an audience out there that also has a similar itch.
No, that's awesome. I think there's going to be a lot more people writing books, right? Especially as that process has gotten easier, like you said. But yeah, so much value there. So I don't want us to run out of time. I want us to hit a couple other things that you are an expert in. And one of those, like just creating content, you know, effectively. Mm-hmm. Lay that out a little bit. Let's talk about that because it's something that's so important, again, for branding and brand building. How do you do that? And let's go through some different ways you do it as well.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll start off, I guess, on the YouTube side. I've been investing heavily in YouTube. I think that YouTube is, in my opinion, the way to go because it amplifies multiple senses, right? Your visual senses, your audio senses. And again, when you see someone across from you and on a screen, it makes it easier to like them or trust them, you know, because you see them physically. And so next time I see, let's say you in person, Whitney, I'm sure I'll be like, hey, Whitney, you know, we were, you know, I've watched like a ton of your interviews and luckily we had this opportunity to sit down with one another to discuss today. But, you know, it creates that immediate connection that, you know, audio definitely does do that as well. But I think video amplifies the trust factor. Along as far as like content creation on the YouTube side, I have a frequently asked question section that I, you know, every week I just answer a frequently asked question for my audience. I also do run several meetups, virtual meetups, one being Commercial Real Estate 101, which I market heavily on LinkedIn. And we have people tuning in from all over the country. And we discuss topics that are pertaining to commercial real estate. You know, our upcoming meetup is related to commercial brokerage versus residential brokerage. We have someone going to be talking about adaptive reuse. We have someone going to be talking about commercial real estate tax strategies. We've had people talk about retail investing, industrial investing, you know, everything under the sun pertaining to commercial real estate. And so we record those Zoom meetings and have them live as well. So people can tune in or, you know, record or view them at a later date. And then in person is also, in my opinion, extremely important, especially for building, you know, recognition and establishing relationships on a local level. So we run a monthly real estate investor meetup group here in Louisville, Kentucky. It meets the last Wednesday of every month and we have speakers talking about different real estate topics. And we're getting between 80 and 100 people showing up on a monthly basis before the pandemic. And we've been starting to build back up after the pandemic. So now we're getting between 40 and 50 and it's slowly growing as it was before ever since. So I guess those are the ways we create content. And we also record those meetings as well with an external camera.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's good. It's great stuff. But you mentioned like you run many meetups. You just went through a few. How do you do that? Like break down a little bit because even that's daunting to most, right? Especially if they've never been in front of a room, spoken much. You know, it's like, wait a minute. You know, I don't want to be in front of the room. I don't want to be leading that discussion. I don't want to get asked those hard questions, right? How did you get through some of that in the beginning? And then let's get into, you know, managing that many meetups.
Sure. So I think the biggest thing is getting over that initial fear. Because in reality, with meetups, at least the way I structure my meetups is I'm not the expert. You know, I invite an expert to come in. And so I just become the interviewee or the interviewer, I should say. So really I have to come up with is just the questions. And then really my job as the host is to make sure that people feel comfortable, that people feel welcome, that they feel like they're gaining value. So I become the connector. So, you know, if there's 50 or 60 people in the meetup, I try to at least meet a few people that I've never seen before come to the meetup. And then I put them in contact with someone within the meetup that could be of value to them. And now it becomes a community. So, but that takes time. You know, our first meetup, I think we had 14 or 15 people show up. So it wasn't, you know, you tell all your friends, you're dragging people to the meetup and trying to get them to commit to it. And it was rough at first because there wasn't a lot of engagement, but you know, the first month was 15, the next month was 22, the next month was 30, the next month, you know, so it slowly starts growing and expanding. And by the time the pandemic hit or just before the pandemic, we had almost 100 people show up to one of our meetups. So it was amazing to see the growth, but that doesn't happen overnight. So the first step is really, you know, to create a meetup. So go to meetup.com, create the meetup, establish a relationship potentially with like a local restaurant owner or some other business owner that could let you utilize a space in exchange for you buying products or something at their location. And then from there, you know, market. And then when people show up, make them feel comfortable, make them feel welcome, and make sure you loop in engaging speakers. And I do it on a monthly basis so that it's not a significant time commitment. And you know, people kind of get burned out if you try to do it every other week. So.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Some great tips there. You mentioned, I mean, like what, 12 or 15 people showed up the first time. And then, you know, after, maybe you could tell us how long it went from, you know, 12 people showing up to 100 people showing up. How long was that time period? How long did that take?
11 or 12 months, almost a year.
Okay. But 100 mm-hmm. people showing up. I mean, that's incredible, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's probably not too many meetups that are that large. I know there are many that are even a lot bigger, but it, probably a very small percentage, right, of all the meetups are 100 guests or more. And so what? Tell us about the venue, though. Yeah, that probably changed, right, the meeting space to hold that many people. And then even, like, are you paying for that space? You know, how did you manage that?
No. So actually, it was a pre-existing relationship that my co-host had with the business owner. So he runs a restaurant called the Manhattan Project here in Louisville, Kentucky, and he has a back bar area that just has like a private bar and meeting area. But it's utilized as a restaurant typically, but on Wednesday nights, which is their slowest night, which is why we picked them Wednesday night, it's easy for the restaurant because it's like, oh, wait, we'd almost never have anyone come on Wednesday night. So, you know, it's better for us to have, you know, 100 people show up on a Wednesday night, buy beer, buy booze, you know, eat food, whatever, you know. So it was an easy sell for us as far as, you know, trying to get them committed to it. But the venue actually luckily hasn't changed. I mean, we've been able to, it's a decent sized space. So we just were able to fill it in better. You know, the first meeting, it was kind of awkward because, you know, it's a pretty decent sized space and there's almost no one there. And so, you know, the owner's walking by looking at us like, okay, is this going to be like the amount of people that show up on a monthly basis? But, you know, he had faith and I think we rewarded his faith.
You mentioned you had a co-host. Is that mm-hmm. something you recommend? You know, how do you manage that? Who's holding the meetings or what does this co-host do?
So, yes, of course. And he's a good buddy of mine. When we first started, it was actually a question I posed on Bigger Pockets to try to, you know, get to see who would we be interested in trying to, you know, establish some sort of real estate meetup. And luckily, my co-host, Luke Neubauer is his name, reached out to me and said, yeah, let's do it because he's excited. He's a local investor. He's actually originally from Louisville. I've only been in Louisville for about 3 or 4 years now. So I don't really have a significant amount of long-term connections here. And so he has a significant amount of those connections. And so he's been instrumental in, like, you know, looping people in, you know, making connections as far as speakers are concerned. So, and he's been awesome and he's just a gregarious and fun loving guy. And so people really love him. And, you know, he's got, you know, 30 plus or 20, I think he's got 27 or 28 doors just himself right now. So he's definitely, you know, growing as an investor locally. And he's 35 or 36 right now. So, you know, he's definitely going to be a big time investor long-term. And so, you know, people just respect them. So
you mentioned, and I know I think something that most people would be worried about too is finding those speakers, finding those mm-hmm. guests, you know, that people actually want to come see and listen to, right? How do you find them? And are there, you know, any kind of, what's the word? Like, I mean, things that they have to have for them to be a speaker at your meetup.
No, I mean, not typically. We like to target people who either are regularly engaged with the meetup or, you know, have some ancillary value that we just haven't talked about yet. So, you know, we've had people talk about, you know, multifamily development. We've had people talk about single family home flipping, you know, it doesn't really matter the individual. We just want to make sure that they have a history and experience on in some capacity. And then, you know, even as far as being an effective communicator, that necessarily isn't a prerequisite because luckily Luke and I are very good at trying to, you know, coax out good answers from the audience or the speakers and the audience is very receptive. So it's one of those things where people get at ease very quickly when they're in front of the audience, luckily, just through the community that we've built. But yeah, experience is number one for sure. We just want to make sure they're able to contribute some significant value to the audience. And a lot of the recruitment we do as far as speaking is concerned is just, you know, looking, you know, people that are doing cool stuff locally, whether that's, you know, through the local CREA or RIA organization, or, you know, we see them on YouTube or social media doing some cool stuff and we know they're local. We actually had some people that we had come down from Indianapolis that we thought were really cool. And we said, hey, you know, we got 80 to 100 people here that are investors. Like if you want to come speak, you know, and they took us up on the offer. So, you know, it's more regional because again, if you can say, look, we're going to get you 50 to 100 people showing up on a regular basis, that may be a good enough sell to be able to recruit people outside of your city.
Well, I was going to say that, but you said it first, because no doubt about it. If you get 100 people showing up in person at your meetup, there's many people who would come to speak right in front of that many people. It's not like, I mean, you know, I feel like you ask somebody to come speak at a meetup. That's almost like most people, especially if they've been speaking a long time, they're going to feel like, not another meetup, right? You know, I don't have time to go speak, you know, to that 12 to 15 people, right? You know, that like, it's just not worth my driving or flying there or whatever. But when you can gather 80 to 100 people you can get some good guests, right? It's very, I mean, you're holding an event. I mean, at that point, it's not just a meetup. All right. So Rafael, you know, we got to change gears just a little bit with just a few minutes left. And I want to get a few more questions out of you. So our answers and you've been in commercial real estate for a long time. You're getting into development. I'd just like to know, like, how do you, I like to see someone prepare for a downturn. Maybe you're the investor. Maybe you are preparing to do another development deal, whatever that may be. But, you know, how do you prepare for a potential downturn?
Yeah, I mean, just analyzing worst case scenarios, you know, you always have to do that. In particular, when you're analyzing investment opportunities, I feel like there's a lot of optimistic investors out there right now that are, you know, utilizing underwriting practices that I'm, in my opinion, are very optimistic. And, you know, that may be okay for the next year or two if we don't experience something significant. But in reality, like you said, we're probably going to experience something. I mean, it probably won't be as significant as something like 2008. But, you know, any correction, in particular, if you're optimistic in your underwriting criteria, can put you under. And so I would say, you know, the biggest thing is just look at all the worst case scenarios and try to run through them. And if you feel like that's a risk you're willing to take, then go for it. Now, if you're representing other people and their money, I would be very cautious with that because you're a fiduciary to that investment. So if anything, you should be taking less risk to make sure that you're able to be a steward to your client's money.
No, awesome. Yeah. He analyze risks to death, right? What are the risks and what are we doing to guard, you know, against those risks? But you mentioned it a little bit. Do you have any predictions over the next 6 to 12 months? Anything that you expect to happen in the real estate market?
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, I just don't see asset prices continue to raise as much as they have over the last, you know, year or so. You know, it's been crazy, both on, you know, the residential market and the commercial market in particular in assets like multifamily and industrial. I just don't see that being the case. And at some point, I think the Fed is going to be lowering interest rates. I'd imagine probably the next, you know, 6 to 12 months. Once that occurs, we'll start seeing some sort of correction take place. And so, you know, if you're currently frustrated with the fact that you're not able to find an opportunity, just wait. I think there will be some opportunities that come down the pike. And then, you know, on the retail side, I'm a big fan of retail, in particular, like shopping centers that are located in desirable areas, great visibility, high traffic counts, great accessibility. I think there's going to be a unique opportunity there as far as purchasing those properties at good values. And, you know, those could be great investments long term.
What's your best source for meeting new investors right now?
So it's been, I've been lucky in the sense that, you know, I've built up a pretty good brand locally in the area. So I kind of have established myself as kind of one of the go-to resources as far as commercial real estate is concerned. So I've had investors reach out to me from kind of all over, you know, they see me on LinkedIn or they see me on YouTube, they see me on, you know, they somehow got a copy of my book or whatever. And so it's actually not been as hard for me to deal with, you know, finding investors as far as the brokerage side is concerned, as far as investing in particular projects. Like you mentioned, I'm just getting started in that front and I'd like to do a project on my own with my own capital before I take on other people's investments for the reason that I just want to be a steward to that money once I do accept it. But yeah, as far as finding investors are concerned, you know, putting yourself out there is the big thing. And then over time, people will reach out to you. And I'm sure you've seen it on your end. I mean, you do a phenomenal job with your podcast and I'm sure it's paid dividends as far as getting investors in front of you.
Thank you. Yeah. No doubt about it. It's taken a ton of work, but it has. It's gotten us in front of so many people. I meant to ask you and quickly, because we're about out of time, but your team behind the content creation, I'm sure you're probably not the one doing every post. Maybe you are. I don't know. But what does that team look like quickly? What are they doing to help you create all this content and push your brand out there like that?
So luckily, I mean, the team member that I have is one video editor for my podcast. Other than that, I mean, I just don't edit that much, you know, and I think it's come through, you know, just consistent production of video. I've become very comfortable in front of a camera and, you know, I create a light script for myself where I just kind of go off of and, you know, I don't spend too much time editing and that sort of thing because it does take a significant amount of time. And so, you know, I luckily haven't had to have too many people, you know, as far as team members are concerned. Now, as I start scaling in the business, it would behoove me to invest in, you know, more VAs to be able to, you know, create the content or at least write out like the actual verbiage as far as the videos are concerned. But, you know, right now it's kind of a one-man show. But yeah, I see the value in it. And that's something that's on my action items for the month. I'm in a mastermind, and one of my action items is to, you know, post a job description for a VA. So
nice. Yeah. I couldn't recommend it enough. I've used, I don't know, dozens of virtual assistants for all kinds of things. So number one thing that's contributed to your success.
Consistent action. And I think the biggest thing that you mentioned was the morning. Take advantage of your morning. Read the Miracle Morning, and then incorporate whatever it teaches within your day-to-day routine, and just, you know, have a great morning. Every great morning adds on top of each other.
What's been that daily habit for you that you've been disciplined about to help you achieve success?
Writing. Writing's been helpful. And then I'm part of a Toastmasters group. I was president of my Toastmasters group as well. Public speaking is a very, very valuable skill. You need to get excellent at it. And I've been, part of the organization for the last 5 years, and it's been life-changing.
For 5 years in Toastmasters, that's incredible. I have not joined Toastmasters, but I've thought about it many times. I'm sure it would be very valuable. And also, how do you like to give back?
So I'm a big proponent of giving back. I serve on various boards, Junior Achievement. I was a SIGEP in college. And so I serve on the local board there. And my buddy and I started an organization in college called Engineers for Business, which teaches engineers business skills, marketing, sales, et cetera. And so we're trying to get that off the ground and try to become a national organization. So I'm doing a lot on that front to try to get it up and going. And then, you know, I donate to causes that I believe in, especially those that have affected my family. My grandmother had MS, so I'm very much a proponent of studies towards that. And, you know, I think it's extremely important to give back when you've had a lot of blessings. And in my life, I've had a lot of blessings.
Rafael, well, I appreciate your time today. You have definitely given a lot to us and sharing so many things about branding, how you have done that well. I mean, over numerous books now, and even some of that process that I feel like you've helped us think through. You know, maybe it's not as daunting as we thought. It's still a big achievement either way. No doubt, lots of time to create a book, write a book, and make it a success like you've done many times now. But maybe it's not as daunting, for the listener as they thought. But congratulations just on your success as an author. And then appreciate you just breaking down the content creation side and the value of YouTube, but also the meetups, man, going from, 12 to 15 people to 100 people, even in 12 months. I mean, that's an accomplishment. You're holding like a monthly event, right? I mean, that's incredible. So just congratulations, on all your success there. Tell the listeners how they get in touch with you and learn more about you.
Yeah, sure. So, you can reach out to me via my website. It's www.rafaelcollazo.com. You can reach out to me via LinkedIn. I'm very active on that platform. Feel free to, go to my YouTube channel. I have a podcast called the Commercial Real Estate Academy Podcast, where we talk about commercial real estate topics and interview people from all across the nation to talk about commercial real estate topics. So that's something that, could be of value to your audience. And just feel free to email me, whatever you'd like. All my contact information is on my website or via LinkedIn.
Thank you for listening to the Real Estate Syndication Show, brought to you by LifeBridge Capital. LifeBridge Capital works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate, while also donating 50% of its profits to assist parents who are committing to adoption. LifeBridge Capital, making a difference, one investor and one child at a time. Connect online at www.lifebridgecapital.com for free material and videos to further your success.